This is Free Thought Radio with your hosts, Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try.
Happy December, everybody. And no, there isn't a war on Christmas, but we're happy to. How did you put it, Brian, last year?
I think I said lob a few snowballs.
Yes. Lob a few snowballs at the mingling of religion and government at this time of year. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and this is Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist. But as little kids, we used to lob those snowballs pretty hard. So maybe this is a little mini war on Christmas, but...
Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. It started off with just three of us back in 1976 when I was very young.
The mother, the father, and the Holy Ghost?
Or... No. A mother, daughter, and a friend from Milwaukee. And now we're 14,000 and growing. And we work for separation of church and state, and our members are personally free from religion. Atheists, agnostics, freethinkers, skeptics, and so on.
And maybe with the news this week about the escalation in Afghanistan, this isn't a good week for a joke. But our response to the big news announcement is maybe a good response would be a one-liner from Yip Harburg, the lyricist and the agnostic songwriter. He's an atheist, and he wrote Somewhere Over the Rainbow. Here's one of his short little poems. We learn this after every war, that life is not worth dying for.
And I want to thank his son, Ernie Harburg, for sending a bumper sticker to us last week, and I put it right on our car with that very same saying. And you can read all of the irreverent rhymes by the songwriter Yip Harburg, including what we just recited, but many that are free-thinking, in FFRF's recent reprint, Rhymes for the Irreverent by Yip Harburg. And it's a great non-holy gift for the freethinker on your list, available at FFRF.org. And that's the end of my ad.
Coming up, we'll be talking a bit later on the program about Christmas or the winter solstice and many of the biblical myths about the holiday. We'll be talking with a real expert, one of the guys that I call the go-to guy when I'm doing research, a real expert on the New Testament. His name is Robert M. Price.
And now there's a whole lot of news to report and experiences to relate, right, Dan? And you just got back from London. How was it?
London was fun. I was there for 6 days. I did six events in 6 days, including three debates with Muslim opponents this time.
Were they imams or just...
No, they were just Muslim apologists. That's what they call themselves, defending the faith. Adam Dean was one in Abdullah Andalusi. They're very well-spoken, very educated, and actually very nice people. And we had pretty intense debates there. One at Birkbeck College, one at Imperial College, and one at King's College. And during one of the debates, I stood up in front of the audience with the red A pin, you know, the Richard Dawkins Out campaign, that A pin on my jacket. And I pointed to it and I said, this pin stands for atheist. But I guess it could stand for American, although I'm not sure which of those would get me in more trouble these days. And there was a lot of laughter from.
And were some of the women in purdah or covered up?
Yeah, there were some. At one of the debates, the big debate, there were six or eight fully black from head to toe with little eye slits coming down, you know, coming down the stairs into the lobby and sitting in the back of the room. And boy, you should have seen the Muslim guys all turn and look as these black figures came down, these Batman figures. I guess it was more attractive to them to see that dressed like that. And during the debate, I asked Abdullah, I said, why do the women dress like that? And he said, well, because God knows, Allah knows that men have this terrible sexual temptations, and it would harm men to be looking at women's bodies if they were. And I said, I turned to Abdullah and I said, yeah, but women have sex drives too, and aren't women going to be harmed when they see your handsome frame there, Abdullah? And he kind of laughed. He says, well, it's different, you know. I also did some other events. I spoke to the Central London Humanists, wonderful group of people. Josh and Jeanette showed me around London a little bit. And then at Conway Hall on Sunday at 3
o'clock. Which is historic.
Historic.
At Conway Hall, free thought abolitionist place.
The ethical, South Place ethical culture. Some really sweet people, including Barbara Smoker, the famous atheist who you write about in your book, Women Without Superstition.
Was president for a quarter of a century of the National Secular Society.
And she was there, and she said to say hi to you. And it's one of these libraries with all these old dusty books by Bertrand Russell and Charles Bradlaugh. It's just one of these great places to be. And then I was on a national UK radio show as well, talking about my story.
Well, well done. And while you were gone, what was I doing?
Well, the day that I left, we hardly had a chance to say goodbye because that was on the 24th, I think. And you had a real interesting experience yourself right here in Madison, Wisconsin. Why didn't you tell us about that?
More like an ordeal. Deposed for 5 hours where there were breaks and lunch. So it was probably more like 4.5 by the Obama administration in cahoots with the Alliance Defense Fund, which is that ultra-fundamentalist outfit. And it was over our National Day of Prayer lawsuit against the Obama. Now the Obama administration started off with Bush and the press secretary, Mr. Gibbs.
And they videotaped you, right?
Yes, which was totally unnecessary and just to do intimidation. And so,
did you feel like you were like being interrogated?
It was exhausting, yeah. Absolutely exhausting. And you have to keep your focus every second. But we are fighting that really strong. We did drop our complaint against Wisconsin Governor Doyle, which was a coincidence last week, just because the issues were getting muddied over standing in Wisconsin. So we are just straight on suing over the National Day of Prayer statute enacted in 52 and amended in 88 so that it was the first Thursday of every May the president has to issue this proclamation. And they all eagerly do so and tell us not only to pray, but what to pray about. And that includes President Obama.
Okay, so, tell us what you said when they asked you if you object to Columbus Day.
Oh, they went on and on about that. And I finally said, because some people don't like Columbus for obvious reasons, American Indians and so on. And I finally said, well, there's a big difference between Columbus, who really did exist and is an historic figure, and God, whom you cannot prove exists, and whose prayers you certainly can't prove are answered. It was just ridiculous.
Well, they got that on tape now. Good. To change the subject, quite a bit, actually. You could read all the news in the past week about the Irish Catholic Church covering up the sexual abuse by priests, and also that the police force for the Irish Republic failed to investigate reports of priests abusing children. The police force conspired to protect Catholic officials in Dublin for 30 years, from 1975 to 2004. And the commission said, quote, "the misguided or undue deference," unquote, "was shown by the police to religious institutions," to put it mildly.
So Irish eyes aren't just crying anymore about the pandemic of sexual and physical abuse of children by the Roman Catholic Church and their minions, but Irish eyes are angry. And Nell McCafferty, whom you'll hear in this upcoming excerpt, is speaking out to the Roman Catholic hierarchy, as she's an Irish journalist, playwright, civil rights campaigner, and feminist.
And she's talking right to the Archbishop there.
Yeah, and you have to listen carefully with her accent. She's talking about the rape of children, and why do these priests deserve to get the honorific title like Father?
Can you tell me why you insist so on accolades being accorded and titles which, in view of how he's covered up the rape of children by priests, can you see the black savagery and ignominy of sitting up there today calling yourself Father McCullen, Father Aquinas Duffy? You still want children to call you Father, much less Reverend Father, is one of the titles you accord yourselves. Why should a bishop be called His Lordship? Why should you be known as Your Grace? Why should Cardinal Connell, who presided over this degradation, be called His Eminence? Why did you refer to the Vatican, which Satan abides, as the Holy See? What is holy about that?
Good for her. And you should have seen the look on the face of that archbishop as he couldn't run. There was all the media and everybody there listening to her talk. She went on for another couple of minutes just excoriating the hypocrisy and the evil of that institution. And this month, 'tis the season, of course, for state church violations, and the Freedom From Religion Foundation is fighting back against many of them. We'll talk about our thought-provoking No Gods Winter Solstice display, which is up in two state capitals so far this year to counter religious messages in these core government buildings. Then we'll hear about what the author, the Bible scholar, the former preacher, and now non-believer Robert Price has to say about the authenticity of Jesus and the New Testament stories about him.
I'm Annie Gaylor with Dan Barker, and we'll be right back.
Ask for a sample issue of Free Thought today and find out more about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. This is Free Thought Radio. Protect the First Amendment. It protects you.
The dazzling April moon.
There was none that night, and the month was June.
That's right. That's right.
It warms my heart to know that you remember still the way you do.
Ah, yes. I remember.
I'm Annie Laurie Geller with Dan Barker. You might recognize the inimitable voice and delivery of comedian actress Hermione Gingold, and that's with Maurice Chevalier from the musical Gigi. And why am I playing that on Free Thought Radio? Well, first, she's funny. Second, Hermione Gingold was born on December 9th. I think it was 1897, so her anniversary birth date is approaching. And third, regular listeners will probably have guessed that Hermione Gingold was an outspoken atheist. And I'm nearly done reading her very fun autobiography, How to Grow Old Disgracefully, thanks to a loan of the book from my mother, who was pleased to finally find some interesting reading among the large print section at the Madison Public Library. And Hermione Gingold is just one of many famous freethinkers who have enriched life as we know it. And you've probably never realized she was a non-believer. I didn't know she was a non-believer until last week.
But now you will remember it well. And now on to those December state church violations our office is busy dealing with. It truly tis the season for the Freedom From Religion Foundation's Guilt Winter Solstice message, which returns for its 14th annual visit to the first floor rotunda of the Wisconsin State Capitol for the entire month of December. The solstice message in the Capitol was composed by Ann Nicole Gaylor, Annie Laurie's mom. She's the foundation co-president emerita. Co-president emerita of the foundation.
She wasn't co-president. She was president emerita.
She is president emerita, right?
Right.
Okay. Now that we got that cleared up. The sign says that she wrote, "At this season of the winter solstice, may reason prevail. There are no gods, no devils, no angels, no heaven or hell. There's only our natural world. Religion is but myth and superstition that hardens hearts and enslaves minds." And that the line at the bottom or on the back says, "Keep state and church separate."
And we have a new grad in our office, a new employee, Katie, and she suggested a slogan that I really like. It's always the season for reason. And we also like to remind people that the real reason for the season is the winter solstice coming up on December 21st, the shortest, darkest day of the year, signaling the return of the sun, the real new year, celebrated for millennia in the Northern Hemisphere with festivals of lights, evergreens, feasts, and gift exchanges.
Our solstice display, our No Gods solstice display, practically brought down Washington state government last December when we put it in the Capitol there, and you heard about it on our show, to counter a nativity display that didn't belong in that capital. I actually placed it in person, and the very good news is that the state of Washington has banned all displays from the interior of the capital as a result of that brouhaha.
So, hooray for us. And we don't think religion or irreligion belongs in a state capital. But we have had to put our No God solstice sign in the Illinois state capital because it recently misguidedly also allowed a man to place a huge creche next to their state Christmas
and
tree.
And what is a creche in case of
nativity display?
Scene?
And here's a little coverage from Springfield, Illinois, ABC TV.
Nancy Fox admires the tree and the nativity scene in the state capitol rotunda.
Last week I noticed they were putting the tree up, and so I came back to see what it was like this week. I was very happy to see the nativity, because if it wasn't for that, we wouldn't have Christmas.
Right now, there's just a decorated tree and the nativity scene, but pretty soon there will be several more displays at the Capitol. An atheist group will put up a sign, a wreath honoring fallen soldiers will be on display, a menorah will be lit, and there will be a First Amendment display and a praise and prayer rally, all in December. Secretary of State spokesman Dave Drucker says this is a big increase of holiday time displays at the State House compared to years past. Even so, some displays may upset those who pass by, like Nancy Fox.
It makes my heart sad, but we do have this freedom of speech.
So we'll see if we can work a little secular miracle, if we can borrow a word, in Illinois this year and get them to bar or ban this totally inappropriate nativity display from the state capitol. Stay tuned.
And it really is dismaying to see this enormous, ugly nativity display. And I have frankly never seen a pretty nativity display. And I would think that most true believers would feel offended, too, when they see this really ugly religious devotional display anywhere, much less the state capitol.
Or tacky, or
yeah,
cheap.
Yeah, they're all just not aesthetically pleasing.
Well, even if it was aesthetically pleasing, it was still...
It does not belong in a state capitol, but it just sort of, my heart sank when I saw the videotape of that. It's so inappropriate. And so we will be talking about, was the nativity true? Was there a Jesus? What are all the myths in the Bible?
And why December 25th?
And we'll have Bible scholar and atheist Robert Price to talk with us about Jesus coming up.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this break.
I'm State Senator Ernie Chambers from Nebraska. I'm on Free Thought Radio, which is like an oasis in the Sahara Desert.
Protect the First Amendment. It protects you.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker. Our guest today is Robert M. Price.
He's making a list and checking it twice. Going to find out who's naughty or nice. Who's coming to town? Is it somebody big, fat, and jolly? Or is it the birth of somebody that we think was born on December 25th? We'll talk about that with our next guest, Robert M. Price. Robert Price is professor of biblical criticism at the Center for Inquiry Institute, as well as editor of the Journal of Higher Criticism. His many books include Beyond Born Again, Deconstructing Jesus, and The Incredible Shrinking Son of Man. Forthcoming titles are The Crisis of Biblical Authority, Jesus Christ Superstar, a redactional study of a modern gospel, The Da Vinci Controversy, and The Amazing Colossal Apostle. Bob will probably tell us more about his fundamentalist Baptist preaching beginnings. He received an MTS degree in New Testament from Gordon Conwell Theological Seminary. And he tells us that Billy Graham was the commencement speaker there. He received a PhD degree in systematic theology from Drew University in 1981 and all the way became increasingly liberal. After serving as a pastor to First Baptist Church in Montclair, New Jersey, he enrolled in a second doctoral program at Drew and got a PhD in New Testament in 1993. As he calls it, a brief flirtation with Unitarian Universalism disenchanted him even with this liberal extreme of institutional religion. Robert Price resigned his pastorate in 1994. He's now professor of theology and scriptural studies, Johnny Coleman Theological Seminary. He's a fellow of the Jesus Seminar. He's an executive board member of the Jesus Project, and he's the Bible geek online. And Robert Price's newest book is called, this is a cute title, Inerrant, the wind. So, wow, Robert, you and I have a parallel stories and a lot in common, except I was a soul winner and you became a Bible scholar. And you're still a Bible scholar, even though you're an atheist. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's a natural transition because, as Jesus says in Superstar, I look for truth and find that I get damned.
Well, that was similar to my experience, too, because I wanted to know what was really true. And the more I learned, the less I believed. And reading your book, Beyond Born Again, it's parallel stories about how we would have been better off with our head stuck in the sand.
Yeah. At least we wouldn't be frying in hell in the future if that had been the case.
I want to know something. You were in the Jesus Seminar, and I was fascinated by that whole process. Did you really use little colored beads and put them in a cup or something, or...?
Yeah, they would, because we would vote on the likely authenticity of gospel material using the same sort of rating system, if not criteria, that the United Bible Societies use when they rate the degree of probable authenticity among the readings, like was this in the original manuscript or not. And so we would vote red if Jesus almost certainly said it, pink if he might have, but there's a little doubt, gray if there's a lot of doubt, but it's still possible, and black if it's obviously fictional.
Well, wouldn't it all be black?
Well, it depends. That's kind of what I wind up with, but I always like to point out that I didn't start with that that conclusion. I was kind of doing my own thing, and eventually, because it was black, I thought, well, wait a minute, what evidence do we have? I mean, it's like each bit of it had its own problem.
Now,
it wasn't just...
Could you tell us first what is the Jesus Seminar? Is it still going on? And how long have you been a part of it?
I joined it in 1994. Holy mackerel. It had been going on since the early 80s, though. And Robert Funk, who's now not with us anymore, and John Dominic Crossan decided that all this critical scholarship going on in graduate school just never makes it to the pulpit and even the university classroom. It's all just the same old Sunday school stuff, and they wanted to go public in a big way to let people know, hey, this is what biblical scholars really do and think. And they did get the big splash they wanted, and it does seem to have penetrated the public mind a bit.
But is true, isn't it, that the Bible scholars know so much more than lay people about, they're so much more skeptical.
Or preachers, even.
Yeah, because if you get, these guys are all honest historians. Some of them had various faith commitments, the Jews, Catholics, liberal Protestants, Episcopalians, who knows what, but they were all sincere in trying to exercise the historical method, which is skepticism. You don't just swallow what ancient sources tell you. You have to weigh them critically and justify them before you claim they're real sources of knowledge about the past.
But isn't that blasphemy to the fundamentalist, to the born-again?
Well, can't accept it because they're all about the authority of the word, and they don't understand what modern critical historiography is, so they make it into a blasphemy by saying, hey, you guys aren't applying faith. What's wrong with you? You can't do that. It's like doing an ice sculpture with a torch. It's just that isn't, faith is not part of scholarly method, and they don't get that.
I remember as a fundamentalist, and you probably thought the same way too, it was all black or white, or in this case, black or red. When I was a kid, I had one of these red letter Bibles, and everything Jesus ever said was in red. But your group produced this Bible with four different colors, right?
You're right. That was the idea. They said, let's do the red letter thing, but consistently.
And so what percentage of it is red or pink in the Jesus Seminar Bible?
Gee, I don't know what it is when you add the pink, but the red came out to about 18% of both the sayings and the stories, interestingly. They did them all sayings and all stories, and both times it came out to about 18%, which I regard as wildly optimistic.
Now, you're pretty doubtful about even the original historicity of that Yeshua, the Christ man, and you've written about that a lot. And why do people think he was even born at all, much less on December the 25th?
Well, of course, the New Testament doesn't give any date or even any real hints as to when he was born. But people just, again, think that they're inclined to trust what they read. I'll often have people say to me, you're so skeptical, you shouldn't even believe anything you read in the newspaper at that rate. And I said, well, certainly you don't just believe what's in the newspaper, do you? Yeah. And they've never thought about it. But people just have this tendency from childhood of it says it there, Bible or no Bible, I guess it's true.
In your book, The Incredible Shrinking Son of Man, you point out that in the first century, there was a cult of Mithra, which probably wasn't the original Persian Mithraism, but it was a Roman kind of new modern cult in which Mithra was believed to have been born. This non-existent person was believed to have been born on December the 25th for basic reasons. And did that leak into Christianity then?
Yeah, around the late second century, we do have people saying he must have been born on the 25th, but it seems like they were just trying to justify borrowing a date of a widely celebrated holiday, namely Brumalia, the rebirth of Mithras, the sun. And since people were already having office parties and sending gifts and all that, including Christians, it appears the bishop said, well, let's just try to co-opt the thing, have them do it, but try to tone it down and make it about the real God.
You mean they actually deliberately co-opted it? They talked about it.
So. There's no place where somebody says, hey, why don't we do this, brethren? But it looks that way because none of the arguments Tertullian and others put forth about the date really seem to be historical inquiry. They sound like reverse engineering from a conclusion they'd like to adopt.
Now, this is something that the general public still just doesn't get because every year we educate and try to re-educate about the reason for the season, which is the winter solstice. And people act like they've never heard of it.
Yeah, I'm sure most of them haven't. That was the, I have to assume, even the Epiphany, Little Christmas, also the baptism of Jesus, June 6th, that's the solstice according to an earlier version of the calendar.
Or January 6th, wasn't it?
I'm sorry, yeah, January. And that was the birthday of Ion, the Lord of Universal Time. And so even that is, I mean, that's really telling you that it must have been the solstice thing. Jesus was thought to be God, they didn't really care too much about the nativity. It was the resurrection that made the big difference to them.
Because the solstice has been drifting, right? It used to be actually on January 1st, and back in early Rome, wasn't it around December the 25th? Today, it's moved into December 21st.
Yeah, plus they kept updating the calendars and changing them, and that's kind of created chaos. The calendar wars have been, well, polemics, I don't mean shooting wars, have been big in religion because of that. We go by the old calendar or the new calendar, and they still have debates in the Russian Orthodox Church, for instance.
About which is which.
Yeah, and which is the real Christmas, the real Easter. I figure I don't care as if I get double the amount of chocolate eggs and presents, it's okay by me.
Who's going to say no to chocolate?
Yeah, that's right. Come on now.
Well, we want to get back after this segment and talk, I think, more about your break with religion and a little bit more about this whole Jesus mystique with Robert M. Price, who is a Bible scholar. He was a Bible scholar when he was a believer. He's still a Bible scholar today. As a non-believer, I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker and Free Thought Radio. We'll be right back.
Find out more about Free Thought Radio and the Freedom From Religion Foundation at FFRF.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker for Free Thought Radio. We've got a non-believing Bible scholar, Robert M. Price, on the phone with us from North Carolina. He was a pastor. He has many theological degrees, and somewhere along the way, he became disenchanted with religion. So welcome back, Robert. Are you Robert or Bob?
Bob.
Bob. Okay, Bob. I really enjoyed, you are a fellow and worked on the Jesus Seminar, and I really enjoyed the books that were produced. The Five Gospels was that first one, where you gave the result of your votes. And I think the introduction to that book was worth the whole price of the book, because you scholars, you don't just give us your conclusions, but you give us the reasons why you're thinking that way, and what are the criteria, and how do you date, and how do you weigh? And I think that's an amazing thing that all of us can learn from. And you were a part of that whole project.
Yeah, the showing how you got the results is all important, because which I try to do, for instance, in The Incredible Shrinking Son of Man. I could just say, well, this didn't happen, he didn't say that. Who should believe me? You know, I figure I have to show you how I arrived at it. And in virtually every case, you see that this has nothing to do with any animosity toward Christianity or any ruling out of the supernatural. Rather, it's stuff like anachronisms. Jesus dealing with things that only came up at the time of the early church and so on. It doesn't have anything to do with, I mean, conceivably he could have said it, but it wouldn't matter whether you're talking about Jesus or anybody else. You can kind of spot things that just don't fit, and that has nothing to do with being an unbeliever, but people find it convenient to write off the Jesus Seminar's work that way.
Yeah, yeah. When you were a young born-again college preacher, you worked with InterVarsity, didn't you?
Yes.
Did you know or think any of these things, or this came later, obviously?
Well, I wrestled with this stuff, and I was reading J.N.D. Anderson, F.F. Bruce, John Wilbrick Montgomery, and all these guys, and took a lot of comfort in thinking, geez, this stuff is virtually provable. But the deeper I got into it, the more I had to distance myself and say, now, I want to use these arguments to convince unbelievers. Let me put myself in their position and see if I would really find this convincing. Otherwise, I'm just a spin doctor.
Big mistake, right?
Yeah, uh-huh. And so eventually I realized, well, you know, there is another side to this. And the more I researched, the more I found factors that none of these apologists ever even mentioned. And I realized, geez, this just doesn't work. It's not only full of holes, it's all whole.
Now, if you were to meet, say, not even just a fundamentalist, but say a moderate believer on the street, and try to condense in a nutshell what your feelings are, what your research shows about the authenticity of Jesus in the New Testament, what would you say?
I'd say that there is no real historical evidence that all of it seems to be all the Gospels seem to be rewritten from the Old Testament or even from the Iliad and the Odyssey, and that a lot of the stuff is just inspiring and beautifully written. Don't want to take anything away from that, but it just seems to me highly unlikely that there was such a figure as the Gospel Jesus.
I just read MacDonald's book about the Gospel of Mark and the Odyssey. And at first, I was kind of suspicious, like, how much connection is there? But it's amazing the parallels that he and other scholars have brought. I was shocked. You know, you could imagine that maybe one or two things might accidentally parallel in the story. But point after point after point, and sequencing and all that stuff, it's really eye-opening to see that kind of scholarship.
Yes, it is. That is an excellent book.
So is one of your points is to try to bring this scholarship to the general public? Is that one of your goals?
I think that's very important, because otherwise they're just trapped in the hypnosis of people that use the Bible as a credential for their own authority and like to just boss people around.
Now, you sound very jolly and very happy about everything. This must have been rather wrenching, though, at the time.
Yes, I didn't want to approach the precipice where you would no longer be saved, and of course it only looks that way from the Christian side, but I found immediately once I had said, oh, okay, that's it, I just don't buy the evangelical Christian thing anymore, it was like I'd been born again, hallelujah. I just saw every face, every place glowing with a kind of radiance and an inherent interest that I had not ever seen before.
Like my mom, when she became an atheist, she said, she took a deep breath and she said, I don't have to hate anymore. She could just enjoy life.
Oh, that is so revealing and so well put. I remember one evening a bunch of us from Gordon-Conwell had gone down to Cambridge to hear Harvey Cox speak. I had always kind of liked him, even though I shouldn't have. And we were just sitting in some cafe someplace, and suddenly, as I looked around, I just felt this wall fall away, that everybody here is just people. There's no saved and damned sections in the restaurant.
And there's no angels or demons or principalities looking over your shoulder or any of that stuff, judging what what was going on.
Yeah, oh boy, what a comfort to know that God doesn't have a bullet with your name on it.
Yeah, that is a comfort. And well, this is like a free thought testimonial.
So Plutarch long ago said, you know, the difference between the atheist and the superstitious man is that the atheist believes there's no God, whereas the superstitious guy believes there is but wishes there weren't.
Yeah, you know, it's a God isn't a very nice person in the Bible.
Mm.
Before we end, we want to tell people how they can contact you. You have a website, is that right?
And, yes, and it's robertmprice.mindvendor.com. Vendor VNDOR. So it's robertmprice.mindvendor.com.
And your newest book is
Inerrant the Wind.
Inerrant the Wind.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
We're looking forward to your new books coming out. That was Robert M. Price, Bible scholar. This show is produced by the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Our announcer is Buzz Kemper. Go to ffrf.org/radio to hear everything archived and podcast.
Thanks to our engineer, Brian Tirani. And don't just listen to us. Join. Call 1-800-335-4021. Ask for the December issue of Free Thought Today. Go to ffrf.org and make that same request and get involved and speak up and educate the world with
join
us.
Join a forum and sign up for action alerts and
tune
emails.
In next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.